addict named Ron.
Hey, Ron.
Oh, it's an honor to be here. Isn't it good to be clean? It seems like every time I get asked to do a meeting at a convention, it's always on the steps. And I prayed about it a couple years ago. I said, maybe one day they'll give me one of those topic meetings, you know. And they gave me one last year at another convention I went to, and it was nice, but it just didn't feel the way it feels when you get an opportunity to speak on a step. Because I believe that the steps are the bread and butter of our program. Because without these 12 steps, I surely wouldn't be standing here right now. And I'm going to go right to the issue of the topic, which is the fourth step. The first thing I want to say is, it's a monster and run for your life. Now I'm lying. Actually, it's not a monster. My watch broke, as a matter of fact. The battery went dead, so I don't know when I'm supposed to stop. So hopefully they'll tap me on the shoulder, because once I start going, I can roll. If I tell you I have a lot of money and I got a big house on a hill, you know I'm lying, so it's time for me to stop, because I don't have that yet. I got cleaning September 23rd, 1988 in Baltimore, and I didn't come in here through a treatment program, and I didn't come in here through any outside entity. I happened to run into a friend of mine that had 3 years clean that I used to use with. She looked like $1 million. I looked like a trash bag. I still didn't think I had a problem. She came up to me. I saw her, and she came up to me. She gave me her number. She said, anytime that you need to talk, give me a call. She didn't tell me about Narcotics Anonymous. She didn't say anything. She just gave me her number. About 3 weeks later, I wanted to, like, end it all. I came to a head at my life that I just completely felt like a failure as a human being. All the bridges were broken. The family was gone. There was no more friends. There was nowhere to go. I just felt like ending it. Needless to say, I didn't have a real big wardrobe at that time, and so I reached into my pants 3 weeks later after meeting her, and her number was still in that pair of pants that I had on. And I pulled it out, and I called her. And she came and got me the next day. She said, can you hold on? She talked to me for a good while on a payphone. She said, can you hold on to the morning, and I'll come get you? And I said, yeah. And she came and got me. And that was the 23rd of September of 88. And I have not looked back since. I don't believe that we need to relapse in order to recover. You know, I believe if you come in here and you do what our basic text tells us to do, that your life will change. And it doesn't say that your life will change and you'll get a lot of money and a big car and a big job and all that other stuff. For me, my life has changed in the fact that I can look in the mirror today and like who I'm looking at. I respect who I look at. I care about who I look at. You know, and it took a lot of hard work and a lot of years to get to that point. You know, the fourth step is not an evil step. It's not a step where you have to, like, freak out and do it. I mean, in order to do it, you don't. You have to be fearless. And fearless means, for me, is that I worked the third step and told myself that I was going to turn my life over to the care of a higher power that was going to show me that whatever I do, that I was going to be all right. And I really truly believe that, you know, in order to, like, have an opportunity to work a fourth step, it's really strong to have a very, very strong foundation in the third step. Because without that belief and that power that you've turned your will over to, getting into this process of working the fourth step and looking at yourself can be very overwhelming. And it was overwhelming for me. I discovered a lot of things about my character that I didn't like. But I also discovered a lot of things about my character that I did like, but I didn't know how to deal with them. I didn't know how to use them. You know, I was always a person that thought that I was like this big evil guy. First of all, I'm not big. And second of all, I really wasn't all that evil. I was a good, fast talker. But I got in a jackpot with somebody that was bigger than me, that I owed money to, which happened a lot. I was good at talking my way out of getting my ass kicked, basically. So I was good with my words. That's why I think most addicts, when they get clean, or even before they get clean, but most of them when they get clean, they become successful salespeople. We can sell. I started to sell when I got clean, and I tell you, I could sell a blind man glasses and make sure that he would wear them every day. I was good at it. But I found out a lot of good characteristics about myself. But, you know, what I really had to focus on was the things that I didn't want to focus on, the characteristics of the person that I didn't want to be anymore. Those were the things that I used to hide behind for me in order to be able to live. You know, I mean, I would like, you know, like I said, thinking I was this bad person when I really was a soft, kind-hearted person who I am today. You know, I was riding down here to the convention with my sponsor. He's in the other room. I hope I'm talking loud enough that he can hear me. He had to go to another meeting, and I know why. But we were riding down here, and this convention here. I asked my sponsor to be my sponsor at this convention 9 years ago, or 8 years ago, excuse me. And it was at I just lost my father, and it was 93, whatever year that was, how many years ago that was. It was 93. And I ran into him at the dance, all the way in the back where the first chairs are when you walked in. The convention center has now been remodeled, but it was different then. And we got to talking, and you know, I didn't have a sponsor, I just lost my dad. I was in a real bad spot. I weighed 342 pounds. You know, I was eating everything in sight, and I was just a mess. And I had like 5 years clean, you know, or maybe, 5 years clean. And was in a bad spot, you know. He became my sponsor, and I did a lot of work with him. And the moral of the story, what I'm getting to, is I worked on myself. I worked the fourth step. I did a fifth step, and I've worked all the other steps. And on the way down here, I said, I wish I wasn't such a nice guy, you know. And I'm not sitting here patting myself on the back that I'm a nice guy. But sometimes, you know, it seems like nice guys come in last. You know what I mean, guys? Especially when you're, like, looking for the date or the girl. And I'm single, you know, and I do that, and I'm a nice guy, you know. And I just don't have it in me to be, like, this real tough, treat somebody mean anymore. I just don't have it. You know, that's sure at work with me, and then I can sometimes get crazy. But I really don't have that in me. I'm a caring person, and I care about people staying clean, and I care about people's feelings, and I care about, you know, what people are doing, and how they're feeling, and how they're thinking, and what they need for help, and, you know, all those things. You know, I went to the merchandise committee today, and I bought all these things for people back home that are new, that couldn't make this convention. You know, and I didn't buy nothing for me because, you know, it's about giving it away. And I've learned that by working this fourth step. You know, I never gave nothing away. It was always about me, 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 me. It was never about anybody else. So working the process of finding out all the character defects that I was hiding behind in my fourth step, it just got real, you know, got to a point where I no longer could hide behind him. I had to do some work on those things. You know, an inventory to me is like, you know, it's like you go into a room, if you're running up, I'm in the food business, and I have to check my inventory every day. And if I'm out of, like, tomato sauce, I got to make sure that I order tomato sauce. You know, and that's, you know, it sounds kind of funny, but that's like what an inventory is. If I'm out of, like, not caring, I have to, like, work on caring. You know, and if I'm out of, like, and if I've got too much anger, I've bought too much anger. I have to learn how to let some of that anger go so I can learn how to care. You know what I'm saying? And this is what this step has put in front of me. You know, I'm not going to get in. I'm going to try not to get into like sharing about the fifth step because it's a whole other ball game. I want to stay on the fourth step, and I hope I don't jump too far away from it. Because it's important that this addict standing here, you know, I need to talk about me. You know, it's important for this addict right here to continue to take a look at himself every day. You know, I've been clean for a while, and I feel good going home at night. I feel good sitting on the couch. The girl said it tonight at the main meeting. I got the cable. I got a couple clickers. I got the computer. I got. And it was all because I worked this step and found out that I could receive. As I was a person that didn't feel worthy of receiving. I was a person that, like, I didn't feel like I deserved anything. You know, I came from a family that was very, very, I don't want to say they were dysfunctional, but they were dysfunctional. I come from a family that my father was a very angry man. It was a very violent background that I came from. There was a lot of fighting going on in my family. There was a lot of pain in my family. It wasn't a lot of loving. It wasn't the kind of family I'd come home from wherever I came home from and my father was there waiting to hug me. You know, it wasn't like that. I was afraid to go home a lot of times. You know, I was afraid to tell the truth. I learned how to lie early. You know, I learned how to, like, get what I want when I wanted it early. I learned how to manipulate early in life. You know, way before I picked up the first drug. Like, all these character defects didn't come from getting high. They just manifest into a monster while I was getting high. Because, you know, when you're in the grips, or when I was in the grips, I didn't care about anybody. I mean, I was about me and the story, you know. So I learned all these character defects from what the environment I was brought up in, you know. And I've been through a lot of years in recovery, and I've done a lot of work on myself, and I can sit here and point fingers. But the bottom line is I've come to this fellowship, and it's about a self-help fellowship, and the self-help is me. I had to come here and I had to work these 12 steps to learn how to change me. I can't change anybody else. I can't change my family. I can't change my brothers, you know, my mother as far as family is concerned. I can't make my sponsees do what I think they should be doing. You know, I can't make anybody at work. I'm a boss today at work. You know, it took me 8 years in recovery to learn how to work. But I'm a boss today at work because, you know, I've been blessed in that area. And I have people underneath me that respect me. But I can't make them do things. You know, I can only be a power of example. And how I become a power of example is by taking a look at myself. You know, so it is a painful step. It was a painful step for me. I'm a kind of person that believes that this is a very sacred thing when you're doing a four step. I would work my four step when I was working my four step, and I would stay, you know, strictly with my sponsor with this. You know, I wasn't like one of these kind of people who would go in the rooms, and I'm not saying you can't, I'm just talking about me, that would go in the rooms, raise their hand, and start shouting out some stuff that I used to do in my previous life. You know, because a lot of it was a lot of shame-based stuff. You know, I used for 18 and a half years, and a lot of that years was using because I was very, very ashamed of who I was and who I become. You know, by working the step and finding out that I did not need to be that type of person anymore, that it was okay to let go of the shame, it was very, very revealing to me. It came to a point where I got another shot of hope. You know, this is a step that gives us another shot of hope. Just like the first step lets us know that, you know, we're powerless over our addiction. And the second step tells us that we don't have to repeat the same things. And the third step tells us that our higher power loves us and gives us faith to move forward. you know, and just want to touch a tiny bit. I have some sponsees out here today because I paid them each $10 to come in and listen to me.
And pay my own 20.
I tried to do that with my sponsor. You see how that worked. He went to another meeting. And I got some sponsees out there that have sponsees out there in this meeting today that are ready to, you know, venture into their fourth step. You know, and I think it's such a personal thing, you know, to like to have a close bonded with your sponsor. We have a pamphlet on sponsorship, and that's reason being because it's something that's very powerful in this fellowship. I would not have been able to work on any of these things that I talked about without having the faith and the strength of my sponsor being behind me, you know, because I needed that person behind me to like let me know, you know, even though I turned my will over, you know, and you know, just because I turned my will over, I didn't like just roll over like, all right, it's over, he's running the show and I'm all right, you know. I needed like a live person to like to call and cry to. You know, I spent many nights on the phone with my sponsor crying over some of the things that, you know, I was ashamed of. You know, I kind of like did a fifth step some on the way of working my fourth step, you know, before I actually did a fifth step with my sponsor. And I guess that was a kind of like a dope fiend kind of thing for me, because I wanted to kind of prep him to let him know, like, I'm not like this person that you think I might be, even though I was creating this person. He loved me. Didn't matter if I was blue. He loved me. He loved me no matter what, you know. But I challenge everybody in here to work a four step. There are people that believe that you need to go back and work the steps over and over. You know, I'm not one of them. And I'm sorry if I disappointed you. I'm one of these people that believe that when you work the steps, continue working the step. You know, I'm constantly working in four step in my life every day. I'm constantly learning new things about myself. I'm constantly working, you know, all the steps in my life. We have a 10th step that lets me know about, you know, what I'm doing every day. You know, I'm always, always staying on top of my program as far as, like, what's going on today. And the people that know me know when I speak, you know, at meetings that I share what's going on with myself right now. I mean, it's really easy to go to a meeting and let everybody know that, hey, Ron F. is doing great. When Ron F. inside is dying, you know, and I don't have time for that today. I want to live. You know, I want to live. I like nice things now. You know, got Calvin Klein shirt on. I didn't even know who Calvin Klein was. Somebody said, you need to get some clothes, man. All right, I used to wear, like, Wranglers, that kind of stuff. You know, whatever Kmart sold, you know. That was my thought. I was doing good. You know, these are Calvin Klein. So he was Calvin Klein. So, you know, that's where I come from. But I like these things. You know, but if I stop coming here and I stop doing the things that I know that I'm supposed to do, continue to work on myself, yeah, I will forget about the new things that I have discovered about Ron in the fourth step. And I will go back and revert to the old things that Ron used to do, and fear will creep in. I will forget about the power that I turn my will over, that I trust. I will forget about them things. And I've tested that a little bit around here. You know, I've stayed away from a meeting for 1 or 2 weeks. Nuts. Like Planner's peanuts. I was nuts. You know, I needed like, I mean, I was like ready for marathons. You know, my sponsees sometimes get on me sometimes. I go to meetings, you know, fairly a lot. But I sometimes have to leave early. You know, I leave early because I have a job to do. And I have to be up early. And I have to get my sleep. But I at least go to the meeting. And I at least try to put 45 minutes in or 40 minutes in. You know, to be honest, sometimes I'll go to a meeting and I'll like, I'm still sick. She said at the meeting tonight, don't put the old timer on a pedestal. She said it, not me. I'll still go to the meeting sometime and say, man, I don't want to hear him. He don't have a message. And I'll leave. And you know who suffers? I suffer. And I don't feel like I'm suffering at that time, but it happens down the road.
Right.
Because that's just one less meeting under my belt. You know, and I don't have time to play with my recovery like that. You know, I don't want to go back to like Kmart shopping. You know, I like buying tulip trees and stuff there, but you know, I don't want to go back to that. Recovery is good. It's real good. And it's good to the sense that I'm able to be available in the universe that my higher power has created me to be in. You know, I'm able to be a power of example. I have a girl that works under me right now at my job. And I've been at this location. My job, sometimes we get transferred, and I've been at this location for almost 2 years. You know, and you get clean, and you stay clean, and you see people, man, you like taking everybody's inventory. Oh, they need to be. Oh, they need this. They need that, you know. They need to work that step. These people ain't even in recovery. But and it's funny that you never know as you plant seeds. You know, we're farmers in here, man. We plant seeds. Even if you don't think you're planting them, you're just like buying gas, you're planting seeds. You know, because that's what we do. There's like this glow. It's like this thing about being clean. I don't know what it is. You know, we got something real powerful in here. You know, they used to say, wait for the miracle to happen. Well, the miracle happens the moment you walk into Narcotics Anonymous. I just got the tap on the foot, so my watch stopped. I got one more thing to say, and then I'm going to turn it over to our next speaker. But the moral of the story is that staying clean is the number one thing. Praying is the number two thing. And it's real important that we do that. And don't be afraid to tackle the steps, because the steps are what our whole program is about. You know, I mean, it's kind of like insane to think that we're going to go to a 12-step fellowship and not work the 12 steps. You know, it's like going out to eat and not ordering anything. You know, that's the way I look at it. But I planted this seed at work with this girl, and she's got 33 days or 34 days today. She's not here, but you know, I got her some stuff at this convention, you know, to give to her, to let her know that I love her and that she can do this thing. And that all came from working a 4-step and working the other previous, all the other 11 steps to go with the 4-step. You know, I could go on and on and on. I hope you all have a great time. The Spirit is alive here. It is awakening. This is a great topic for our convention here. I want to thank the convention committee for asking me and having me an opportunity to come up here and speak. And if nobody told you they love you today, let me be the first. I love you all. Thanks.
Thank you, Ron. Now I would like to introduce our second speaker, Dwight W.
Good evening, family. I'm Dwight, and I'm an addict. It's truly only by the grace of God and my understanding, people like you in rooms like these, that I'm here tonight clean. And it's an honor, truly an honor to be here. And I'd like to thank Ron for sharing prior to me. And I'd just like to touch on a couple of things. I wonder if anyone else has ever experienced these feelings. Knowing that you're coming to a convention and that you're going to be sharing on a certain topic, and all of a sudden, every meeting that you go to, you planned what you're going to share. Nobody else ever done it. Okay. But what has always happened for me without fail, is that whatever I planned over the past month and a half, 2 months, gone. So what I do when I sit at the table, I commune with God and ask that His will, not mine, be done. And that His Spirit be within me when I share tonight. I recall my first convention. I've been affiliated with this convention for a number of years. And my first convention was in 1987 at the Stouffer's Concourse Hotel in Crystal City, Virginia. It was CPRC and A2. And I had never seen anything like it. All you addicts together, and the hotels were still standing when we left. Most of the towels were still there. And the dance, the doors did not open precisely at 10 p.m. as I thought they should have. So I started kicking on the door. That was just my behavior. And a guy who's one of my sponsees today, you know, asked me to be his sponsee because of that behavior. He wanted to exhibit that same behavior. You know, so it's attraction rather than promotion around this thing. You know, thinking back, I became spiritually dead a long, long time ago. In 1962, my father passed, and he was the closest thing that I had to a God image in my life. And I cursed him, I cursed God, and I set out on a sabbatical from life to do what I chose to do and to seek what most Dauphins seek, which was an easier, softer way. I wanted everything, but I wanted to do nothing. So I had uncles who were willing to put me through school, and I'm here to inform you tonight that I have graduated summa cum laude from the School of Hard Knocks. I've had an opportunity to see the United States courtesy of the federal government. They've sent me to places like Memphis FCI, Terre Haute USP, Lewisburg USP, Petersburg FCI, you know, and some other local higher education places. But that was all because I chose to do things my way. And I can recall before I ever picked up, I was the guy in the neighborhood when I came out and I was around 9 years old, all the other kids had to go in the house. Because I was deemed dangerous. I was real dangerous. I would take lighter fluid and squirt it in the sewer hole and throw a match down there and blow the top off. I would shoot out the streetlights with my BB gun since I was the only one on the block who had a BB gun, and we would play hide and go free. I did other things such as cutting a hole in the bedroom door of my mother's home, going in there stealing her money and telling her that I didn't know what happened. I used to steal her car regularly. So what I'm saying is, if I did these things to my mother, you can imagine that I had no cut cars. Now, all these things were beginning to make me feel worse and worse inside. But that didn't stop me from using. What I did was I began to use more. In the beginning, in 1962, when I began to use, it was fun. So I thought, if you can call throwing up on yourself, you know, fun. Or not remembering what happened the night before and your friends having to tell you what you did, fun. I was having a lot of fun. Somewhere between that point in time and the end, the honeymoon ended and the nightmare began. And I continued to feel worse and worse about myself. Stepping forward a little bit, I was introduced to this program in 1984. And I came in here and I saw all you people in here and something was wrong with y'all. You really looked like you needed some help. And I was a soldier. I could handle it. So I was, you know, going to continue to do my thing. And I stayed on the research committee. Y'all know about that. Those of us, see, we talk about relapse, but in order to relapse, you first have to be in recovery. So I just went back out and used. And I did that for another 2 years. Again, God intervened in my life and sent an angel, United States probation officer, in my life, who told me what I needed to do. And I went into an in-house detox, and I got kicked out 2 days shy of my release date for being involved in a sexual encounter you know, in a restroom. And what I did, I know no one else has ever done that either. But what I did was I came home after being released 2 days prior, and I'm married. So I had to explain to my wife why I was home. And I worked the ninth step. And I had no knowledge of the previous eight steps. So that was a very grave error on my part. I got a lot of resentment, animosity, you know, a lot of things were there. So it was very important for me to get a sponsor who had a sponsor, who had a sponsor, who had a working knowledge of the 24 spiritual principles of this program, and who went to meetings on a regular basis. I have a descent genealogy in this program that's strong. You know, I still got the sponsor today that I had in the beginning. He still goes to meetings. I still go to meetings. My sponsors go to meetings. You know, all I can do is focus on me. Today, I'm the most important person in the room to me. That's what makes this program both selfish and selfless. And I love those things. I found that the only step that I have to work perfectly is one, which means to me, very simply, that I cannot do this thing alone. My way doesn't work. And I had to not only admit that I was powerless, I had to accept. Because see, I admitted in 83, but I didn't accept until 86. So once I was able to accept my powerlessness, I was able to begin to do some work on me. Things began to change in my life. And I like what Ron said about living these steps, not having to work the cycle over again. What I've learned how to do is incorporate these steps in my life. The first three steps were critical for me. My sponsor told me that I would know intuitively, that I would feel it inside when it was time to move from one step to the next. And I did. And he also told me, and not saying that every sponsor does the same thing, my sponsor had me write on all the steps. You know, I sat down and wrote. And when I still have the first thing I wrote on the first step. And when I look back today, I say, good God Almighty. You know, how crazy could I have been to have sat down and wrote that stuff? But that's where I was at that particular point in time. This program has afforded me the opportunity to grow, to be involved in service, to get a better understanding of myself. Now, you got to understand that when I came in, I had this big negatron on my shoulder, and it weighed heavily. I came in here suffering from terminal uniqueness. I thought that I was the only one who ever did the things I did the way I did it. You know, and that I was a bad person. You all helped me to understand that I was just a sick person in need of help. In understanding this, I was able to begin this process of dealing with the steps. The restoration to sanity. I had never been the same person. I told you what I did before I started using. And you know it escalated after that. So coming in here, a restoration for sanity was going to work. I used to work jobs 2 weeks, long enough to get a check. You know, then I quit and go out and hustle. Then that sounded logical to me. What I did, I learned how to become a responsible parent and husband. What I do every year for the convention, I bring my wife and try to bring both my daughters, but I got one in Howard University, so I got my youngest daughter here, my NA baby. I bring them down on Friday night. I usually go to the main speaker's meeting. I play cards till 2 o'clock in the morning. And then on Saturday, I hang out with the family. It's about achieving a balance in recovery. See, I can be a meeting bum, too. You know, when you go out and the gutters need repair, the lawn needs mowing, and things of that nature, and you say, baby, I'm going to a meeting. And you come home, and all of a sudden, you find that you're homeless. you got some issues, you know. So I've learned how to incorporate my family into this thing called recovery with me. In dealing with the fourth step, I was able to sit down and pray and let the pen flow and write down some of those innermost things that I said I was going to take to the grave with me. I was never going to share these things with another human being because they were sick, very sick thoughts, very sick actions. But I began to write them down, and in writing them down, I was able to see that there were some character assets in me as well. You know, I hold the door for little old ladies, you know, there's other things that I do. And, you know, that step, I began that step when I was 8 months clean. And like I said, my sponsor told me I would know intuitively when it was time and I needed to free myself from some of that garbage from my past. But, like Ron was saying, some of those meetings that you go to and, you know, you're not able to stay because you know you got to get up early in the morning. Well, I was kind of like that with that fourth step. Well, this meeting doesn't end till 10:30, I mean till 9:30, and it takes me till 10:15 to get home, and I got to get up at 5:30 in the morning. So I'll write on the fourth step tomorrow. Now, every time tomorrow gets here, it ends up being today. So finally, at 16 months clean, my sponsor told me, just go ahead and take care of what you need to do and finish writing. And I was able to do that. It says, write this step as if there were no fifth step. Just stay here in the present and deal what you have to do. And today, you know, I look at where I am and where I came from. I stopped sticking up because it carried too much time. And I became a guy who's commonly known as Petty Freddy. You know, I would steal a radio out of your car, steal your car. I would do things of that nature. And I remember my last trip in, I had 107 counts of grand larceny because I was Petty Freddy in quite a lot of areas. And the beauty is, through this spiritual awakening process, today I work for the federal government. I'm the chief of the transportation unit in the security management section of my agency. You can't tell me God does not have a sense of humor. So looking at that, you know, I'm looking at situations that are going on today and living these steps as I move through the day. You know, being humble. You know, we got bio packages a couple weeks ago. They want us to downsize some. And they're talking about a rift if that doesn't occur. And I'm not targeted, but I think it's in my best interest to see how marketable I am. One of the places that I applied to is the United States courts. Here we go. God got humor again. And it'll be, if this job should come through, it'll be a facilities program manager, and part of it will be space management and design, including designing cell blocks. Now, HP ain't got a sense of humor, you know, and it's not working in my life to help me to get better with me. I'm a guy that had a lot of anger when I came in here, you know. I was angry at me for living the way that I've lived, for doing the things that I've done, and God has helped me to ease those things out in my life. Again, with this sense of humor. I have a national transit subsidy program that I'm in charge of. And I have employees there who will lie, cheat, steal, and do all kinds of stuff in this program. And I have to go through an investigative process and do all the things that I have to do. And I have to do it with the utmost customer service. So, you know, I'm learning. It's a continuous process for me. And I don't want to trade this thing for anything in the world. In order for me not to trade it, it's critical for me to continue to do today what I did in the beginning, which is go to meetings, pray, and try to help someone with no strings attached. These are the things that I do. And this convention is a big part of my staying clean. Every year you need to get away somewhere. Just need to get away. The job getting on your nerves, all kinds of stuff going on. So this is my spring break. And I come down here, and a lot of times, please don't, if there's any newcomers, please don't take this the wrong way. When I come for the atmosphere of recovery. Not necessarily for the meetings all the time, because I may have a meeting in the hall that gives me everything I need to carry on for that day. So I come down here and I see people that I have not seen in a year or possibly longer. And we get together and we may go out and eat and have a good time. And that's the way this whole program works. Dealing with the steps. I've heard people say that you don't have to work the steps. The steps will work you. I believe that that's the most profound misinformation that can be given in these rooms. Because you only get out of this program what you're willing to put in it. To what lengths are you willing to go to get this thing called recovery? Do I just go to the meeting right around the corner from my house because it's convenient for me? Or will I go 45 miles to a meeting because someone's asked me to share? Or will I come up with an excuse and say, oh, well, I can't make that, man, it's out of my way? It depends on what I am willing to do to keep this thing. And I'm not willing to give it away. I just want to stay here and continue to do what I've been doing all this time. And, that's the way it works for me. And we did. I saw him signals pass. I got five. Oh, shoot. That's what I'm talking about. Okay.
Yeah. Y'all want me to start wailing? Yeah, we move off in another direction now.
Just dealing with the steps and becoming involved with them has made my life tremendously better. I'm able to be at peace with myself and with my family. There's been no disciplinary reports on my job. These are things that would have customarily been going on had I not been clean, because I'm incapable of maintaining an even keel when I'm not doing the things that are necessary. My sponsor told me that it was vital for me to go to more step meetings than open discussion meetings, because there's structure in the steps. And those are the things that I continue to try to do today. Find meetings that are geared toward the steps and traditions, because those are where I get my most help. In my inventory, I had to sit down and I had to look at all the things that I had done and all the people that I had done those things to. And when we use, we say, well, I'm not hurting anyone but me. But when I sat down and began to take that inventory, I was able to see all the harm that I caused to others. And it was not an easy step. Just as Ron stated, it was difficult to go through. But it had to be gone through without that fear. Just moving into it. And when I didn't know what I wanted to write, again, I had to stop and pray and ask God to guide me. When I was able to do that, the pen began to flow again. And I was able to write the things that I needed to write. Now, my sponsor told me when we moved into the fifth step, and I'm not going to move there, but he told me that my writing was brief. It was very terse. You know, I didn't go in detail or anything. And what I did, I wrote about the step as fully as I could at that particular point in time. It also states in the fourth step that you can't write too much or too little. That first one was real short, though. You know, he said, I wrote it like this. When the question came up, yes. No. You know, didn't expound on anything. I just went right through it like that. A little bit more in depth and do some of the things that we needed to do. This thing is a continuous cycle. It goes on and on. And that's the way it's been working for me in my life. You know, being able to stay involved in the steps, being able to pass that same philosophy on to those that I sponsor. The step work is essential. What do you want to do in recovery? How do you want your recovery to be? Do you want to build a castle or a hut? Things for me are working better today than they could ever have in my wildest imagination. You know, I could not have dreamed when I came in here almost 16 years ago that I was going to be at the level I am today in my recovery. But through God's grace, I have reached those pinnacles. It doesn't stop here. You all told me my only limit is my imagination. Ron was talking about those things that haven't come yet. If I believe they're going to come, they'll be there. You know? So I'd like to thank all you all for being here for me. I'd like to thank the convention committee for asking me to share. And as Ron said, no one has told you today. Well, he already told you. But I love you. And I'll keep coming back.
Well, let's give Ron DeWitt another good round of applause.
Thank you, ma'am.
Could somebody please come up and reach us for today?